Guys, welcome to Better Bachelor. I am Joker with a face for radio and a voice for print. Tonight, I'm going to talk a little bit about Richard Prinicky. I'm going to get that name wrong a bunch of times. Richard Prinicky. The reason why he's a big deal is here's a guy that, you know, oftentimes we say, hey, or some of you say, I struggle being alone. I need more friends. What would I do? I get bored easily. I feel like I'm alone. Richard Prinicky, I think it is. Richard Prinicky, he lived off in the wild on his own for 30 years. No phone, no electricity, no running water, no refrigerator, nothing. Just him and nature. And he did this when he was in his 50s. So for those guys that say, well, you know, I'm not okay with being alone, I want to talk about his life and his story and some of the things he did and some of the things he said about living alone, because now this is going to an extreme, but it shows you again that solitude doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing so long as you get your mind wrapped around it correctly, you have the right outlook about it, and again, you may say, well, I don't want to live alone for 30 years. I get that. But if you are alone while you're doing school, or you're alone because your job didn't work out and you moved to a new town, or you're alone because your girlfriend broke up with you and you don't have any friends, all that, what I'm saying is all that is okay. That if a guy can rough it out for 30 years with literally nothing, most of us would be okay without, you know, having close friends or a relationship, because we do have the internet and texting. And even if you say, well, there's no one I can connect to on the other end, you've got forums, you've got YouTube, you've got other things. But I want to talk about him because I think it's a great example of like being really literally a bad mofo, like being a bad dude, because he started from scratch and worked his way from building his own house and everything else. So let's get recording, then we'll talk about it. The first image you see popped up here, this is Christopher McCandless. They did a movie about him called Into the Wild. And this is a guy that hitchhiked across the United States. It's a pretty good movie. I haven't read any books about him. But he got to Alaska, went out to the middle of the wilds. He ate either a berry or a plant that blocked his ability to absorb food properly. And he ended up not making it. And the story about him is pretty interesting. But he failed, and this was in the 90s. He failed in the 90s. How about a dude that did it way, way before him and who was about twice his age? So I want to talk about Richard Prinicky, 30 years alone in the Alaskan wilderness. I'm just going to touch on this first part because it's a little bit of backstory on him and it gets a little bit long. But he was born in Iowa in 1916. It's Prinicky, I guess is how it's pronounced. He was in the Great Depression. He enlisted in the Navy and was active in 1941 during the war. And then he got rheumatic fever. And then he trained to become a diesel mechanic. He tinkered with sheep ranching. And then he became a heavy equipment operator in Alaska because a buddy of him was up there. And he ended up loving the countryside. And in 1962, he said, you know, I love it up here so much, I want to do this. And so he got out there. So listen to this guy. Great, it's a great story. And then I've got a little bit of a study afterwards that I want to read you guys that I think has, again, more to do with about being alone. It says, building his house in 1968 at the age of 52. Now, if the average guy lives to be 80, 75, 80 years old, he's two-thirds of the way through his life. And that's when he decides to start on this new adventure. So those of you guys that are maybe 60, maybe 52, maybe 48, more, maybe 35 or 22, everybody that says, oh man, I can't start over. I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I've got the, you can restart over your life and fix things or take a new direction at any point in time that you want to. So it doesn't mean that you need to stick things out the way they are if you're unhappy. Keep that in mind. So in 1968, at the age of 52, he found a shoreside spot through a friend and began building a small 12-foot by 16-foot or 4x5-meter retirement cabin using only simply tools, mostly local materials, and his ingenious carpentry skills. He chopped down some spruce trees, lugged them by hand, and assembled a gabled roof topped with moss and sod. He built a tall chimney using local beach stones. Talk about starting your life over literally from the ground up. At 52, he's in the woods chopping trees, dragging them down through the woods to build a house. To make it waterproof, moss. To build a fireplace, beech stones. I mean, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I just want to order a pizza. I don't feel like cooking dinner. And this dude legit started his life over literally from the ground up. That is so awesome. Pranecki also constructed a combined storage shed and outhouse, but rarely used the latter because he didn't like the idea of digging latrines over and over again. Instead, he mostly just went in the woods, saving the pit space for his visitors. Guy literally popped a squat in the middle of the woods. He filmed much of the construction process with a 16mm movie camera mounted to a tripod. Along the way, he documented much of the local wildlife, too. Of course, there was no Wi-Fi in his cabin, nor electricity, running water, or telephone for emergencies. Pranecki relied on local friends to fly in supplies roughly every few weeks. Often, that was the extent of his human contact for months at a time. One of his quotes, "I found that some of the simplest things have given me the most pleasure. They didn't cost me a lot of money either. They just worked on my senses. Did you ever pick very large blueberries after a summer rain? Walk through a grove of cottonwoods, open like a park, and see the blue sky beyond the shimmering gold of the leaves. Pull on dry woolen socks after you've peeled off the wet ones. Come in out of the sub-zero and shiver yourself warm in front of a wood fire. The world is full of such things." And you know, kind of an interesting thing here is that some of you are newer and haven't heard my old stories, but I did about, I think, 34 countries in about 13 months, and I backpack and I hitchhike, and I did from Iceland to New Zealand and cut all the way across Europe and through the northern, a couple of countries in northern tip of Africa, and then I went over and did Southeast Asia and then Australia, New Zealand, then I came home. And I did Peru in there as well. But the thing is, there's so many days that I have up here. I can tell you, oh man, the first night I got off the plane in New Zealand, I had to hitchhike, or I had to walk about 10, it was very late at night. I had to walk 10 miles out of the city, and I found this quiet area, and I pitched up my tent behind a couple of pine trees about 20 meters away from the road. And like, I can remember all these really fine, small details where if you ask me, like, what was sleeping in my own bed like 4 days ago, I'd be like, same as it always is, I guess, like nothing eventful. But when you have momentous, unique experiences, like kind of what he's describing, they sit in your mind very fresh. You know, many of us can remember the first time that maybe we kissed a girl, or the first time we thought we were going to, I don't know, die doing something really scary, or the first time we drove a car. These big eventful things kind of sit in your mind for a long time because they're very unique and big events. But as you go through life and you kind of get in a rut of, okay, I get up, I go to work, I do my work, I come home, eat dinner, go to the gym, pet the dog, go to sleep, before you know it, years of your life can pass. And I think you spend 8 or 10 hours a day at work and then another 8 hours of sleeping. Two-thirds of your life is given to other people. What Richard did that I think is so meaningful is he lived every day for himself. Now, how much would a plot of land up there cost in the middle of nowhere where you really only needed to get supplies every couple weeks? How much would you really need to do to plan this? Well, that's up to you. And maybe this isn't right for you. But the point is that he decided to take a different direction. He decided to spend some time alone, and he was okay. You just have to get your mindset wrapped around it. Alone in the wilderness, going such long periods without companionship would tax many people. One of the most challenging aspects of the cabin's location may be that because it is situated on the southern shore of the lake, the low winter sun does not hit the cabin for months at a time, says Richard. The long season of darkness, not to mention the bitter cold and relentless snow, is enough to make some Alaskans feel depressed and anxious. But Pranecki seemed to thrive in this atmosphere. Alan Bennett was a wildlife and fisheries biologist in the Lake Clark area who knew Pranecki personally, and later worked as a volunteer guide at his now famous cabin. He also said the author of Dick Pranecki, Reflections on a Man in His Wilderness, in the late 60s, Richard was, the reason I say Richard instead of, you know, the other name is because of YouTube filters, was truly alone at Twin Lakes for much of the year. His survival in a brutal winter environment rested almost entirely on his own resourcefulness and fortitude. An obsessive observer and diarist, Pernicki once noted he was so busy with his life that he was never lonely. He spent much of his free time writing about the weather, the environment, and the animals, some of which he befriended with regular treats. Idle time was not in Richard's vocabulary, said Bennett. He was always engaged in some activity. He hiked thousands of miles per year, becoming intimately familiar with the miles of wilderness around his cabin. In order to escape the isolating feeling of his valley home, he'd trek to peaks and admire the breathtaking views. That blows me away. That, to me, is as brave as anything he did. Can you imagine not having GPS? He had a compass, it's not like you have notebook papers and reams of the guy's in the wild. So he either had to mark his trail, he had to know navigation quite well to be able to take his bearing well enough, or he had to memorize what things looked like. Because you take a wrong turn, even in the spring or fall, you take a wrong turn, you're not coming home. I mean, that's just, but again, he'd just say, you know what? I want to go to the top of this mountain, see what it looks like up there, and would spend days, thousands of miles a year hiking. That is just so amazing. He caught and ate fish from the lake and sometimes shot and made dinner out of porcupines that chewed relentlessly on his house. Sans refrigerator, he dug into the ground and created a chili store box that helped him prolong his fresh foods. Importantly, he built another storage box, this one high on wooden poles, that was out of the reach of bears and other critters. This dude is incredibly smart. Yet Pernicki wasn't a bitter or angry isolationist. He happily wrote replies to just about anyone who sent him letters, and he made occasional forays into the lower 48 states to visit his family. Fame finds Pernicki. In 1973, a friend compiled Pernicki's lengthy journals into a book titled One Man's Wilderness, An Alaskan Odyssey. I think I'm going to pick that up. That sounds like a good read, especially since it's his journal personally. Suddenly, he found fame. People from all over the world made the journey to Twin Lakes to seek him out. His home movies were turned into four one-hour documentaries. The first was called Alone in the Wilderness. They showed him at his survivalist best, chopping wood, wandering the mountains, living alone in a place where most people could not. And they talk a little bit about his filmography. Finally, in 1999 and in his early 80s, Pernicki was too elderly to carry on with his solitary lifestyle. He returned to the lower 48 to live with his brother in California. He died in 2003, and then he left the gift to the Grand National Park Service. Either way, you'll find a landscape that's changed a lot in the last 50, 60 years, and they go on about that. So that to me just is, now a lot of you guys may say, hey, that's not for me. I do not want to live alone. I do not have any survivalist, like I could care less. That is just not my lifestyle, and that's awesome. But the point is, take a guy that went through the Depression, served in 1941 in the bombing of Pearl Harbor, he studied some diesel mechanic, he studied heavy equipment operating, he studied carpentry, and then just went off into the wilderness to live the last 30 years of his life alone. The point is, how hard was it? Let's say you get up there, and I don't know where he slept when he was chopping trees, and then taking every branch off that tree, and then cutting it to the length that he wanted, dragging it out of the forest, stacking it into a cabin that's, 5 meters by 4 meters, stacking it into a cabin, cutting windows, putting moss on the roof, going down to the beach and finding just the right rocks to build a fireplace, building a fireplace into your place, packing mud or clay or whatever he did between, or probably moss actually, between the logs to block the wind, building your own bed, stuffing it with moss or a dry grass or whatever, doing all that just to survive and be comfortable. And then a lot of times, even me sometimes will be like, oh, I don't have air conditioning. I'm so hot. I'm uncomfortable. This is miserable because I'm sweating a little bit, right? Or I didn't go to the store. And I only have a can of soup and some rice. Woe is me. This dude, This dude didn't have any of that. So it just goes to show you again, a lot of the things that we take for granted that are oh, poor me. I don't have the social circle I want, or my internet's out, or this girl didn't text me back. Those are such small world problems that when you look at the bigger picture, in the long run, things are going to be fine. Things are going to improve for you, and you just got to dig it out a little bit. And that's what I like about his story. The last, and I'll leave links below if you'd like to maybe look at the links they reference in this story if you want to find his book and his movies. This is written about how living alone will transform men. And it's a quick little read. I'm just going to go down through this. Alongside the tired old tales of these poor single women, as a counter-narrative, it's one strength, fulfillment, and independence. The story is often told of single women who live alone. And they go on about how, you know, it's now popular for women to be alone and independent and strong, and they're wonderful, and yay, girls. But the part I wanted to read was, let's see if I can find it here. Here's the part that I think is relevant. It says right here, what is less often noticed is what men get out of living alone. That has changed with Lynn Jameson and Rosanna Simpson's academic book, Living Alone, Globalization, Identity, and Belonging. They point out that as more and more men and women live alone in their adult years, they're learning all sorts of skills that used to be the bailiwick of the other gender. In married life, for example, women were traditionally the kin keepers and the social schedulers. They kept in touch with family, kept up with friends, and arranged social gatherings. In the interviews of people living alone and in their review of relevant writings, the authors found that most young men living alone are doing just fine. They have a network of friends and relatives and keep in touch with people who are important to them. They don't need a wife or to have social life or meaningful human connections. And that's the little part that I wanted to take out of this. Because if you watched my other videos I did just a week or two ago, men are actually get just as much happiness out of friends than they do with being married. It's all about the activity that you do. But the important part out of all of this, and in the book that they wrote, they don't need a wife to have social life or even meaningful human connections. This is important in and of itself, but it's also significant for what it suggests about the future. Right now, if you study people who live alone, as the authors and others have done, what you typically find is most solo dwellers are doing fine. There is an exception, though, when there are people who conform to the stereotype of the sad, lonely, and isolated person living alone. These people are disproportionately older, particularly those who are unemployed or in poor health. Maybe today's young men, when they get a lot older, will do a lot better if they live alone. Right, because if you look at my father's he's 86. I think my father's 86 this year, and he can heat up soup, he can fry a hamburger meat, and make a burger, and probably have a bologna. He didn't know how to cook. He just never has. My mother and my father have been married for like 50 years, I think. I think they just had their 50th anniversary. I'm horrible for not remembering this. But my mom's always cooked, or, you know, and she loves to cook. It's why I gain weight whenever I visit them. And dad's done the mechanical stuff around the house. But now younger people today are, you guys know how to live alone. The thing is, though, now today younger people know how to live alone because they're used to doing things for themselves. And so there is no need for the other person. I don't need a woman. What's a woman going to do? Cook for me? I'm usually a better cook than everybody I've ever dated. Are they going to clean for me? Oh, no, no. It's got to be 50-50 nowadays. What does a woman bring to the table that men don't get, that men can't do for themselves anymore? There's only one thing. That's the intimacy. However, if you get away from the gratification of having a woman say to you, oh, you're such a good lover, and that was wonderful, and you're so masculine, and I love it when you do this. When you get away from that stuff and you just talk about the physicality of it, most 15-year-olds who found Jergen lotion and their hand have figured the rest of it out. And so now there's, and plus with everything that's on the web nowadays, you want something spicy to kind of help you along. I mean, it is there. So I think now the way society's changing is not only is it almost normal to be alone, but it's almost going to become an expectation. There's very, and with the court systems and everything else that we talk about, there's very few reasons. So you have to get used to being alone. That's the thing of it. You better get used to it because you may have a life full of just being alone. So you got to work on your social circles. But the big thing is here, just like Richard Prinicky, if a man can go off and literally start from scraping rocks, wood, moss, building a house and starting his life over from scratch, if you're in a tough spot, you've been broken up with, you're late on some bills, your job isn't paying you everything that you need it to do to afford to fix your car, there are ways around it. There are ways to find your way to make it. And if you say, yeah, but, I just want you to think, and yes, there are lots of things that can go wrong and you can have problems. And I'm not saying that they're not real problems. And I'm not saying that they're not tough. But what I'm saying is that Richard just about literally got plunked down in the middle of the woods and he had to start everything over. Where to sleep, where to eat, how to feed himself, drinking water. He started from a beach, like nothing. And if a guy can do that and survive and thrive and find happiness, I'm sure you guys that are struggling or unhappy can find a place where you can find your zen, find a way through it, and find a better life for yourself. And I don't know what that is, because for me, I could easily, you know, scrape together a backpack or save a couple $100, get in a backpack and start hitchhiking and eating out of a dumpster. I've done it before because I did it in Iceland. Because when you go to a dumpster that's behind a house or a grocery store, dry goods and peanut butter and bread, and they throw that stuff out on the expiration date. It's not done the day it's thrown out. But you go through there at, you know, 11 o'clock at night when it's dark and you're holding a flashlight in your mouth and you're scrounging through on the surface stuff of what looks good, you can eat like a king. Every once in a while you get something that's a little stale, but my point is, if you can get down to that level and survive and thrive, and look at some of the stories of people in Venezuela right now. I'm just saying that no matter what there is, fellas, if you're in a dark place, it will get better. You can find your way out of it. Guys, if you'd like to support my work, links below as always. If you have, thank you very much. Best way to support me is like, comment, share, subscribe, and check out my older videos. And join me over on betterbachelor.locals.com. Guys, that's it for me. This is Better Bachelor. I'm Joker. Remember, it may be bad. It could always get worse, but there is always a way out. And if you need help getting out, ask for it. You'd be surprised what help you can get.